Hey, Good Together listeners. After almost 4 years of going strong, this podcast is on a well-deserved break. While we're gone, we're sharing some of the most impactful episodes we've run to date, focusing on real-world, sustainable-ish problems you face every day. Keep listening for insights and more. This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create change in the world every day. I'm your host, Laura Alexander Wittig, CEO and founder of Brightly, the number one destination for conscious consumers around the world. At Good Together, we value the planet over perfection and believe that you can make positive things happen for the planet every day by being a conscious consumer and an informed citizen. Listen in as I chat with various experts about living and consuming responsibly. Okay, so Good Together listeners, I am so excited to talk about a topic today that most of us have heard of, but I feel like few of us know much about, which is coral reefs and how they're endangered. So today I'm really excited to welcome Julian Collier, the president and founder of the nonprofit Counting Coral, to the podcast. And he's going to tell us about why this important issue matters to the world around us. So welcome.
Yeah. Hi, Laura. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to chatting
Absolutely.
With you today.
So let's dive into it because, you know, as we know, coral reefs really do play a vital role in protecting our coastal cities from waves, storms, and floods. And of course, we know they're beautiful to look at and important to biodiversity. So can you tell us a little bit about what's going on with them right now and sort of what the urgency is?
Yeah, so it's pretty tragic what's going on with coral reefs, and the word urgency is absolutely correct. So you've nailed that on the head. So everybody's heard of global warming, climate change, human activity that's driving global warming. Well, what people don't realize is when the atmosphere heats up due to global warming, and we're heading to 1.5 degrees of global warming right now, well, the oceans absorb 93% of that energy and that heat. So when that happens, the ocean draws down that heat and the ocean temperatures rise. Unfortunately for coral, they only occupy 1% of the ocean floor, just FYI, and they support 25% of the population directly or indirectly with protein. So it's a huge valuable resource, and it's one of the smallest, you know, populations of animal life on our planet, considering the largest one. It's one of the largest biodiversity situations. So what ends up happening is the ocean temperatures rise, and most tropical hard corals and soft corals can survive between 75 and 85 degrees of temperature in the water. Once it goes past that, they're at the limit of survival. Unfortunately, because of global warming and ocean temperatures rising, those temperatures are in excess of 97 degrees in certain parts of the world. So coral reefs are dying off at an alarming rate. We've lost 50% of coral reefs to date. And that's only happened in 30 to 35 years. So we're looking at very small timelines and massive problems in those small timelines. So it's predicted that in another 30 years, most coral reef ecosystems can be at the point of collapse and functionally not being able to reproduce fast enough to keep up with the effects of ocean temperatures.
Yeah, rising. I mean, it's such an important thing to talk about. And I think the way that you've, you know, verbalized this and tried to tie it back to, you know, the ecosystem as a whole, and also understand a little bit more about the ocean's impact on, you know, just climate change and absorbing rising temperatures, I think is really important, because most people, I feel like when they hear about coral reefs going away, it's more of a vanity thing, right? Like, oh, the beautiful coral reefs are going away. I might not be able to see them on a vacation, or, you know, maybe they possibly consider the animal and the biodiversity angle of things. But to really put it in perspective like that is very interesting. And I think something that our audience probably hasn't thought about. So, you know, if we think about this, the urgency question that we just talked about, so you're saying that we've lost, you know, 50% of these, you know, coral reefs in a very small amount of time. So, you know, how is that happening? Like, what other than, you know, the ocean warming, you know, can you tell us a little bit more about things like coral bleaching or, you know, consumer related damage as well? Because I feel like we've heard a little bit about that too, as a world, but don't know as much about it as well.
Yeah, so unfortunately, coral is just being assaulted from every angle. You have ocean acidification. So when we pump carbon and aluminum oxides, and you name, I'm just naming the list of points, probably about 20 or 30 different chemicals that go into the atmosphere from burning fossil fuels, CO2, and all the rest of it. Well, that gets trapped into the atmosphere, rains down into the ocean through storms, and that adds to the pH balance being changed. And it's noticed that soft shell crabs, their crab shells are now melting, and coral reefs are suffering because we have a lot of soft corals. And those soft corals, that pH cannot change. So you're literally putting acid into the ocean. Then you have one of the third leading cause of damage for coral reefs is tourism. They actually stand on it. I've seen people just stood on 500-year-old pieces of coral that are animals. So it's like standing on the head of an animal. They snap it. They, you know, take it home. They don't realize it's not a rock. So there's a lot of fronts against coral. And then the really troubling one for me is, you know, like human beings have disease, right? And there's a certain percentage of our population that get ill and unfortunately die, right? Well, the same thing for coral reefs. So 4% of coral reefs die of disease. Those diseases are now increasing because of ocean temperatures. It's much like, you know, the pandemic was probably a production of, I mean, there's a lot of controversy about where it came from, but a lot of diseases come from hot tropical climates. So in the ocean, we have the same thing. So those diseases are increasing naturally by themselves. But in addition to that, microplastics are now really, really tiny, and they're in our oceans and in the trillions of tons. And coral eat them.
Oh gosh, yeah.
And it's been noted that the disease has gone from 4% to almost 98% when they can consume these plastics, because it's petroleum based, it's a chemical, and they're literally, you know, getting cancer, as it were. So there's just a ton of stuff coming at them. And then with global change of our environment, we have really, really intense storms. We're getting what used to be category 2-3 cyclones in the South Pacific had just gone straight up to five, category 5. Cyclones, which are tearing up the reefs as well, because reefs are a barrier to island nations, and you've heard of the Great Barrier Reef, but they can only take so much before they just break down, and they cannot grow fast enough to repopulate themselves and come back from a massive storm. So it's coming from every single angle, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a few things in there that I want to get into, but one of the things that stood out to me was your point about microplastics, because we've talked about that a little bit on this podcast, and it's something, again, I think a term that people know, we've heard of, but we don't really know the impact. And so, you know, if you're talking about microplastics ingestion from the point of these coral reefs, you can only imagine like what it's doing to other animals, what it's doing to us as we ingest it. And so, you know, that to me is just almost like a canary in the coal mine for microplastics. But of course, we could do a whole podcast episode on that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the corals eat it, fish eat it, we eat it. I don't personally eat meat or fish. I've abstained from that for 20, 30 years now because of the climate issue. So it's not healthy. And we're consuming these chemicals essentially from every single front. So if you eat meat, you're consuming chemicals because the corn and feed that has been fed to those cows have been sprayed with really, really heavy duty chemicals. And then, you know, chemicals in your home, for instance, can, you know, toxify your body. So, you know, as a human race, we're pretty toxic. And now we're just pushing that toxicity into our oceans and in our environments at scary and alarming rates. And you can see ocean dead zones now. There used to be like one in the Gulf of Mexico back in the 70s. And now I think there's over 350 dead zones in our world right now. And they are gigantic. They're like the size of small countries at this point. So they've exploded in dead zones. So we're just killing our oceans and killing ourselves.
So when you say dead zones, are you referring to to explain that a little bit to me?
Yeah, so agricultural runoff goes into the ocean, and then chemical runoff. So if you look at both of them kind of as connections, so what we do is we go in, we chop down forests, we create agricultural lands, and then we farm the cows on those lands. Those animals degrade that land, and then they need massive amounts of food because they've now degraded the resource that they chomped down for maybe a few months. So then we go and grow just gigantic fields of soybean and corn, and we spray those just unbelievable tonnage of chemicals. Now the rain comes, washes those chemicals into our tributaries, into our rivers, and out into the ocean. Now those chemicals create an explosion of bacteria. Then there's another bacteria that comes in to eat that bacteria, and that bacteria exhausts the oxygen in the ocean, and then the fish come in to try and eat that bacteria because it's like, oh, there's a load of food here, and they end up, you know, not being able to breathe and die. So you end up just thousands and thousands of fish dying across coastlands all over, and there's an explosion of what they call sea snot in Turkey. That's just huge blooms of this algae that just looks like snot, basically, and it's covering the coastlines.
I was not familiar with the concept of a dead zone, so that was fascinating to me. And so, you know, thinking about this problem, right, we've talked about really what's going on in the oceans. I'd like even to take a step back and understand a little bit about how you got into this line of work, how you decided to found Counting Coral, and sort of what inspired you to dedicate your life to this cause.
So my kind of whole thought process on life, it kind of is a deep process for me. And I love to travel. And I love what I call the accumulation of experiential knowledge. For me, when I accumulate knowledge, I feel complete and happy in my life. Now, the way I consume that knowledge is through travel and experience. And the more experience I have, the happier I am. When I die on my deathbed, I'm going to be happy because I'm not thinking about a Porsche or a house or the shiny object that I was glued to and had to buy. I'm going to be thinking about the people I met, my family, the travels, the experiences that I've had in my life, and that gives me joy. So at a very early young age, I understood this very well. I saved up a ton of money and traveled around the world. And one of the first places I went as that world travel was Fiji. And I went onto a reef called the Flower Reef for the first time 22 or 3 years ago. Now, I've been a diver for 30 years and I've dove lots of tropical locations. But this trip in particular was one of these illuminating trips. So I dove on this Flower Reef and it just blew me away, right? I was like, wow, this is what a real coral reef looks like, because I've been to Mexico, I've been, you know, to Hawaii and places like that. But Fiji is just pristine, or was, should I say, 22 years ago. And I was just blown away. And then that inspired me to become a videographer for surfers, because I'm a surfer myself. And I noticed in the water that the guys were only using JPEG files to give to their clients. And I was like, wow, I could create MP4 files, video files, do little videos, edit them, and sell them to the tourists. So now, Fiji is one of the world-class waves on the planet. They hold a lot of the world tour pro surfing circuit goes through Fiji. So we're talking massive waves, dangerous waves, and tourists coming in into those areas to surf are very apprehensive about surfing. They'll wait like hours before they'll actually try and catch a wave because they're dangerous. That allowed me a lot of time to spend in the water filming the reefs. So you can imagine a wave lifting up. It's about a 15-foot wave, and you can see it's crystal clear water. You can see a shark swimming through the backside of it, or a turtle, or a school of parrotfish or angelfish or whatever the fish was. So I was glued to filming the reefs quite a lot. And then I'll be like, oh no, there's a surfer coming, pull my camera out of the water and start filming him, like forgetting that I'm actually there to do a job, right? And then I would go up through the island chains. I'd spend a few weeks editing, going up to the island chains, and the resort operators start seeing me editing. And they're like, oh, what's that? Well, you got a camera, you know, and this was not too many people had cameras back in those days, and not too many people were shooting video. So they're like, hey, would you mind doing a promotional DVD for our resort? So then I started filming their reefs. And that's where the love of coral and coral reefs came into play. Fast forward 22 years, I'm now semi-retired, got a lot of time on my hands. I got years of experience in the building industry, diving industry. So I've turned my attention to saving coral reefs.
That's awesome. Well, I love that story because it really shows how what started as a passion in other areas kind of led its way into your current line of work. So that's amazing. And I feel like if anybody listening has had the chance to see coral reefs in person, like it's really difficult to explain how beautiful they are. And, you know, to think about the destruction of them, both from a planetary perspective and an ecosystem perspective, is just really heartbreaking. And so now we've kind of talked about, you know, the problem. We love to kind of get into actionable steps that people can do to help save coral reefs.
Hey everybody, it's Laura. So I don't know about you, but I've been feeling kind of sluggish lately, and it's made me really want to focus on feeling better. And I realized that feeling better isn't just about hitting the gym or eating perfectly. It's really about finding those little routines that fit seamlessly into your life and give you that extra boost. For me, that's been daily Nutri-Greens. Remember those mornings when grabbing coffee was the only option and a salad by lunchtime felt like a distant dream? For me, daily Nutri-Greens changed that. It's a powder packed with everything good. Essential greens, fruits, prebiotics, and probiotics. All of the ingredients you need to feel your best. But the real win is that it's so easy to integrate into my day. I just put a scoop in water, do a quick blend, and I'm good to go. You can use it in smoothies, water, whatever you like, but it's delicious and convenient, and honestly, that's a win in my book. So check out Daily Nutri-Greens from Equilibria. You can find it at myeq.com.
So I know that they, can potentially partner with nonprofits like yours, whether it's volunteering or donating or things like that. And, you know, I'd love to hear a little bit more about how they could do that. But what are some other things that people can do to really help mobilize and save these coral reefs?
Stop eating fish and stop eating meat.
Interesting. Yeah, go into it. Yeah, tell us a little bit more. I mean, that's a very interesting perspective.
Well, meat production is accounting for 30% of our emissions right now. It's accounting for massive deforestation in Brazil and all over the world. It's accounting for just gigantic dead zones in our ocean. And then fishing, we're probably easily 98% or 96% loss of or breakdowns of all fisheries on our planet right now. And you can watch Seaspiracy, Cowspiracy, Game Changer. I mean, there's a ton of different documentaries you can go and educate yourself on. So educate yourself and do us a favor. Don't start complaining about climate change if you're participating. We have to come together as a collective to stop participating in the madness that we are on, like a merry-go-round going around and round and round, talking about the same problems, but not actually taking any action steps towards stopping these problems. It's not only about animal cruelty at this point. We're talking about a massive problem of gigantic tons and tons of chemicals going into our oceans. And just imagine the packing supply chain of meat in general. You have these massive factories pumping out just gigantic amounts of petroleum and generators to hack up this meat, and then it goes into polystyrene packages, and it goes into trucks, and it's going around the globe in just massive quantities. You have 80 million tons of meat being processed every single year. So we're talking like a lot of problems when it comes to the meat industry and the fishing industry.
Absolutely. And, you know, we talk about this frequently on Good Together, but yes, whether you are looking to completely not eat meat or radically reduce your consumption, it's absolutely important for us all to consider that, because for all the reasons you just mentioned, it's a very, actionable thing you can do in your daily life. So another question I had for you was, you know, my understanding previously of, you know, other things people could do was use something like called reef-friendly sunscreen. But tell me a little bit more about that. Like, I'm sure people often ask you about this. Like, is it really that big of a deal? What should we know as consumers about reef-friendly sunscreen?
Yeah, my point on that is why not use it? That's true. You know, it doesn't cost that much extra, and you're talking, just do yourselves a favor as a consumer, read the label. If you read the label and do the research, you would never put this stuff on your skin. You know, our vascular system is the largest organ on our planet, and it's at the surface of us. I'm sorry, the vascular system is the largest organ in our bodies. And the vascular system is the closest to the skin's surface. So as soon as you put chemicals on your skin, it's a direct extraction of those chemicals and pumped into your bloodstream. Now, you can't tell me that's not going to cause problems in your health down the road. And then all that sunscreen is then going into the ocean. Now, you imagine like Hawaii, where they have tens of millions of people traveling there all the time, just lashing on sunscreen and going into these coral reefs and swimming around as if there's nothing going on. And all these chemicals are now leaching off their bodies and onto the coral reefs. And again, remember, coral reefs eat microplastics, so they also filter, you know, the ocean for debris that's going past. So they have what's called a polyp, and polyps make up thousands of mouths on a coral. So when you look at a coral under a microscope, there's just thousands and thousands of mouths on a coral filtering the ocean for debris and food particles. And that's part of the way it eats. It does have a symbiotic relationship with an algae, but the other way it eats is by filtering. So it's just filtering all the chemicals coming off of people's bodies.
Well, I mean, that's such a visceral way to think about how the sunscreen's working, and, you know, to imagine all these people going in and, you know, not using anything that's friendly to themselves or to the planet. So that's super important. So I'd love to kind of, you know, wrap up our conversation by understanding, you know, an innovation that your nonprofit Counting Coral has created, which is the world's first underwater stainless steel sculptural coral bank. So can you tell me a little bit about what this is and sort of how this is helping to protect and restore coral reefs?
Yeah, so I looked at coral reef restoration on multiple different levels. A lot of restoration projects are just like wireframes on the seafloor, and you see it all across every nonprofit. Just look up a nonprofit saving coral reefs, and they're either like wireframes hanging suspended in the ocean by using little frames with a float ball on it, or they're just stakes driven into the ground in a wireframe, and they plant coral on it as like a nursery. Well, to me, that's uninspiring. It really does nothing for tourism or ecotourism, right? So if you have over 10 million divers all searching out cool experiences, that's probably the least on the list of cool experiences, in my opinion, to go and spend $200 to $270 on a two-tank dive, and you're diving down and seeing some wireframe on breeze blocks or something like that. So that's one of the issues. I wanted it to be a visually appealing coral nursery / coral bank. Because you create stakeholders. So what we do is we design, build, install, and donate these sculptures to organizations doing good work, or we start our own reef programs ourselves. Now, we have currently ready to ship on April 28th, 109 beautifully designed sculptural pieces ready to ship to Fiji to be sunk into Novola Bay on the Yasawa Island group. And it's going to be a beautiful 50-foot underwater sculptural marine park. So it's a 50-foot circle, and it can house hundreds of pieces of coral. Now, that's the beautiful aesthetic, draw in the tourism, create stakeholder part of it. So now all these dive operators around there are going to want to take their tourists to there, because it's a tourist attraction that's something very different that people have not seen. So then they become stakeholders, because they're vested parties in this now. And they're going to be like, hey, we can make money on this. This is amazing. So they're going to have a marketing opportunity. So everybody's invested. Then that when we put our work into the seafloor, we go after what we consider resilient coral strains. Now, these resilient coral strains are genetically superior coral that can withstand heat temperatures going above their normal type of temperature range. So if a reefscape dies, some of them survive. And because of the algae inside of them, they manage to withstand heat temperatures above their normal range. So we go after those guys immediately, because the predators are also going after that, because there's no coral left on the reefscape apart from these few surviving genetically superior coral. So we then grow and grab those coral and put them onto our sculptures. Now we grow out those sculptures to spawn what we can consider spawning maturity. So it can be like 2-3 feet big in a ball that's on our sculptures. And then we allow them to go through the spawning cycle. So they'll grow up, they'll start to spawn, and the eggs and larvae will then go out onto the dead reefscape and naturally propagate those reef systems with this resilient coral. Yeah, so we allow these corals to grow to spawning maturity, and they will then naturally propagate these dead reef systems with climate resilient coral. So they'll just kind of naturally grow on their own. But in addition to that, we've protected them. They're now off the seafloor. They're away from predators, and some of the predators are crown of thorns, starfish, sea slugs, sea snails, and they crawl across the reef and they eat coral. And they're exploding in numbers again because of chemicals. Agricultural runoff is now providing these predators with massive amounts of food. So they're exploding in numbers. That was one of the other issues we didn't actually talk about. But so we take these corals, we put them in a protected environment, allow them to grow spawning maturity. Then after a few spawning cycles, they're big enough to harvest. Now we can harvest up to 40% of that coral. So we come in, we give it a little haircut. So we take little fragments off and we put those fragments onto a secondary nursery table adjacent to the sculptural park, which is also engaging for tourists because they now see the whole cycle of what we consider a coral bank. It's like, okay, they've grown, they've harvested, they go onto these tables. Then what happens? Well, then we plant them out onto the reef by hand, and we do selective like clumping of these corals. So we'll grow, we won't try and like put fragments everywhere. We'll do like a 4-foot circle, and then say 5 feet away we'll do another 4-foot circle, and then 5 feet away we do another 4-foot circle. And that's been proven to be very effective because that coral then grows into each other and has a really nice solid base for fish to come into. So if there's a 5-foot circle, they can come in and hide in that coral. Whereas if you planted fragments like 1 foot apart all over the reefscape, then there's really nowhere for them to kind of congregate and have like a little, you know, artificial reef, as it were. And that obviously takes years and years to do that. And it's in a very slim hope that the ocean temperatures are not going to rise, which they are going to rise. So we're just kind of doing this in a futile attempt to help save corals. But one of the bonuses to our art installations is everything is detachable. So if a massive heat wave comes in and these corals can't withstand the new temperatures because they've been resilient to a certain temperature, they're no longer resilient because ocean temperatures are still rising, we can detach these coral sculptures and swim them to deeper depths where the water is cooler, allow that kind of heating cycle to go through during a summer or whatever, and watch the ocean temperatures cool down a bit. Then we can bring them back up and put them back in their location. Now, what that does is it allows these resilient corals to go through what we call a stressor. So they become stressed. They could bleach even. But when we put them in cooler water, they come back to life and they start to live again. But that's actually teaching them to be able to behave in a way that they need to be stronger. So they've become more resilient now because they've almost died.
Wow. Yeah, no, it definitely makes sense. And I think it's such a creative approach to this problem, right? I mean, just everything from the way that the, you know, mechanism works, the way that you've thought about how to attract tourism to it and working within the ecosystems locally. I think it's just, it's so fascinating, and what a cool project to be a part of, right?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's very, very difficult. We have over 1500 parts that we've got to assemble. Just imagine trying to put 109 sculptures into the seafloor. It's not easy. We need full dive teams, you know, fully certified instructors and dive masters and safety divers. And, you know, you just name the list of the people involved in this. These are massive.
And tell me again where it's going to be located.
It's on. It's in the Yasawa Island group of Fiji. Okay. So if you look at the map of Fiji, on the left side, the western side of Fiji, you have a small group which is called the Mamanukas. Okay. Then you have another group that goes further up to the west, and that's called the Yasawa Islands. And we're doing it just off an island called Nakula Island, which is Nacula. And we've partnered with an organization called Blue Lagoon Beach Resorts, and they are one of the people that are hosting us, supplying divers, in addition to our divers, helping us with the shipping, because again, they're now vested interest in this and becoming stakeholders, right? So they want to help. They want a new marketing opportunity so they can just take over their competition and get more people.
There you go.
Right? But they're also eco-friendly and eco-conscious. So it's a win-win for everybody. They want to be a part of this, you know? So we are actually embarking on a very large reef restoration project, not just the coral sculptures anymore. With this particular project, sometimes we'll donate to an organization that's self-managing. We're actually going to manage this and try and do a very large operation outside of just the
sculptures. That's awesome. Well, this has just been such a wonderful conversation. And to me, it's been very informative and also just helped, I think, do a little bit of myth busting relating to what's going on with our coral reefs and sort of what's going on with the world around us. And so I just wanted to, you know, wrap things up by asking you what you personally are excited about from the movement that's happening now with ethical and sustainable consumerism. Like what excites you the most about what's going on?
I just hope people just understand what ethical and sustainability is really all about, and how be very, very cautious about when you hear that from any company. Just do your research, because it's quite easy to get a sustainable stamp on your company as, like, say, a carbon offset, but the reality is that company may not be truly doing what they're saying. There is a lot of greenwashing going on. I don't want to distract people from choosing potential brands to partner with or buy from, and I would encourage people to buy sustainable products for sure, but just look into the companies and make sure they're actually doing what they say they're doing, because, like I say, there's very loose guidelines to get that sustainable stamp on your website.
Absolutely. Well, you know, we, you know, at Brightly are very committed to helping consumers with that research and going through that. And that's one of the reasons why we started this podcast. But anyway, thank you so much, Julia. We really appreciate having you come on today.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. I really do. And I hope your audiences are interested in our cause. And please obviously go to our website and check it out, because it's a pretty cool
website.
Awesome.
Thanks so much. Thanks for joining us on another episode of Good Together. To get show notes and more, head to brightly.eco/podcast. And as a special thank you to our listeners, use code GOODTOGETHER to get 10% off all products in Brightly's brand new shop full of planet-positive swaps for your home. Finally, don't forget to join in on the conversation with us on social, where I know you can find us at brightly.eco. Don't forget, we're all on this journey together. So have fun putting the planet first and stay curious.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.